When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
Tired yet? I certainly hope you're not, because we got a lot to get to. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm superstar Frank Morano. Tony, how old was your mother when you were born?
21.
Elias, you're substantially younger than both Tony and me, if I'm correct, right?
Correct.
How old was your mother when you were born?
30, I think.
Okay. My mother was 30 also. Okay. My wife gave birth to our son when she was, I believe, 30, either 36 or 37 years old, about 37, let's say. And my mom was 30. Elias's mom was 30. Tony's mom was 21. We are seeing, and my wife had her first child at 37. What we are seeing over the course of American society is a changing face and changing look of motherhood that mirrors exactly the story of the four mothers that you just heard from. You know, Tony's a little older than Elias. His mom was younger. Elias is a little older than Carmine. His mom was younger than Carmine's mom. Meaning my son. And it turns out, according to provisional data from the CDC, more than half of U.S. babies born last year had birth mothers in their 30s and older. Why does that matter? In the last few years, age 35 has gone from the start of what they used to call a geriatric pregnancy to potentially a maternal age sweet spot. So 35-year-olds received more prenatal monitoring than their younger counterparts because it's assumed, if a 22-year-old has a baby, she's going to be just fine. And they had a small decrease in prenatal mortality compared to those even a few months younger. Some research suggests that being 35 plus and pregnant could lead to more brain power after menopause and a smaller gender wage gap. Isn't that crazy? So 35 became the start of advanced maternal age decades ago, thanks to studies on the genetic test called the amniocentesis. But that is a dated paradigm because apparently there's nothing, according to Allison Cahill, a professor at UT Austin's medical school. She told Axios, I have to make sure I credit all these articles now because now Apple makes a transcript of this program available. So heaven forbid 20 years from now, somebody goes back and reads the transcripts of all my podcasts and they find me reading an article on the air without proper attribution. So I have to be extra careful with this attribution. Allison Cahill told Axios, she's a professor at UT Austin's medical school, that that's a dated paradigm. There's nothing really particularly magic about 35. Pregnancy risks absolutely increase with age, but the effects are much more pronounced after age 40 compared to age 35. So they say, according to Jane Van Dees, who's an OBGYN and assistant professor at the University of Rochester, they say that women considering having children by their mid-30s should be acquainted with their own physiology and possible fertility challenges much earlier than 35. So there's always been kind of a stigma about later in life pregnancies, but there's also been a lot of progress. In a recent poll, women's social app Peanut found that 40% of women in their mid-30s and above reported a positive shift in language from their healthcare providers. For instance, Axios quotes this one story. I'm a healthy 35-year-old who's pregnant. In my first prenatal appointment, I told my OBGYN that I was of advanced maternal age. I asked her if that made me a high-risk patient. Her response, laughter. After a pause, she said, you're one of my younger patients. We haven't talked about my age since. That's what they say. Carly is the Carly Malenbaum is the writer of this piece in Axios. It got me thinking. So I looked at the statistics based on this CDC data, and they analyzed the age of motherhood from last year going back not far. We're not talking about to the 60s or the 50s or the 70s, going only back to 1997 and the age at which babies are born to mothers. The share of babies born to mothers between the ages of 25 and 29, down. The share of babies born to mothers ages 30 to 34, up significantly. The share of babies born to mothers age 20 to 24, down significantly. I'll spare you the details on how much they're down, but it's publicly available. You can look it up. The share of babies born to mothers age 35 to 39, up significantly. And the steepest decline, even steeper of a decline than mothers age 20, 24, is teenage moms. Babies born, and really what I've been told by, I have one friend who had a child, I think at age 20, and then she had another one at age 40, and she said that it's a world of difference between 20 and 40. I mean, it's night and day. But age 19 or younger, an incredibly steep decline. In 1997, 15% of all babies were born to moms 19 or younger. Last year, 4%. 4%. And there's a big uptick in moms that are, or babies that are born to moms that are 40 and older. And my question for you is, what do you think this means for society's future? Now, you might think, and I'll give you my take, you might think that this is going to lead to children growing up without parents at a much younger age. If parents are having children later, it stands to reason that they're going to die when that child is younger. And whereas, you know, previously it wouldn't have been unusual, like in Tony's case, if your mom had you when she was 21, wouldn't be unusual to still have your mom in your 60s, for instance, maybe even later. But that's probably not going to happen if your mom had you when she was 40, right? But that's not necessarily true, because people are living longer, and they're, even though they're having children longer, that doesn't necessarily mean they're dying earlier in that child's life. One thing that I do think there's a tie into, and I have no evidence of this, I've asked experts about this, and I've gotten varying views. I do think that there's some correlation between the increase in children with autism and the increase in older mothers, and probably older fathers as well. I can't point you to specific evidence, but that's just kind of what my gut tells me. And I think there is some correlation. I don't know what the correlation is. I think that exists. But on the whole, I think this is a good thing. You know, one of the things that people used to say, which I think is true, is that with age comes wisdom. And I've come to believe that in order to be a parent, I can't even imagine being a mother with all the physical taxing, you know, the physically taxing aspects that that entails. But just being a parent, that you really need the body of a 21-year-old. You need the mind of a 35-year-old. You need the wisdom of a 50-year-old. You need the bank account of a 60-year-old, and you need the patience of a 70-year-old. That's kind of my Frankenstein monster of the ideal parent. But obviously, you can't do that. I think I am, just speaking personally as a father, not a mother, much better prepared now to be a father than I would have been 10 years ago. And I think there's some truth to with age comes wisdom. I think maybe also, so I think maybe you're going to see a whole generation of children birthed this year, next year, the following year, because there's no signs that this trend is going to change anytime soon of people having children older and older. But I do think you may see children have much wiser parents because of the uptick in age. Let's face it. You remember what a dope you were at 19 or 20? I look back at some of the things that I did when I was 19 or 20, and a lot of it I'm proud of, but a lot of it, not only am I not proud of, I don't even want to think about it, right? That I could have done those things. But I really think if you picture yourself, especially if you're a parent, at 19 versus 35, you're a wiser person. Hopefully you are. Hopefully you've grown. Hopefully you've matured. Maybe not quite a maturation as much as we saw from God from the Old Testament to the New Testament, but at least a little bit of maturation. So I think that's a good thing for children. One of the things that I think may not be is, I'll mention two things that occur to me, is when children are being birthed by moms who are 19, 20, 21, 22, I think they're liable to be much less cautious. A parent at 40, oh no, that is a parent that is covering all the electrical outlets, that is putting their kid on a leash, that is making sure they have no time for unsupervised play. I think those parents are more likely to be overprotective, helicopter parents, helicopter moms. I don't think that's good for children. I think the idea of unsupervised play and letting kids get into trouble and letting kids do things that are in some cases dangerous, it's not something a 40-year-old mom would ever do. That is something that a 21-year-old mom would do. And so I think maybe there's a sense of adventurism that is being lost with a generation of children that's being raised by older moms. So I think, you know, you take the good with the bad. And the other thing, I remember, I think my father had me when he was 30, and I'm substantially older than my three younger siblings. But my father's in great shape. He still, even with, you know, he's got a lot of injuries and stuff, but he's still almost a world-class athlete. He is, you know, an older man now, very much a senior citizen. But if you put him on a softball field, he would be probably the best player. He's just an incredible runner, incredible bicyclist, you know, golfer, you name it. He's just in incredible shape. He's the exception for his age group, but he was 30 when I was born, and he was in a position when I was 8, 9, 10, 11 years old to coach the baseball team, right? To go out and practice soccer with me, to teach me things about football and, you know, sports and things of that nature, and make sure that I would go out and run. He would run with me and do 3.5 miles with me. I think if you're having a child for the first time at 40, maybe that's much more challenging to do when your 10-year-old is going into baseball and they need all this physical accompaniment and you're 50 years old, let's face it, a 50-year-old body is not in the same position as a 35-year-old one. So I think maybe that's something that is lost. What does it all amount to? I have no idea. Right? My friend Rich Hoffman, he's very into generational theory. And he's of the belief that every generation, it's not his theory, it's from Strauss and Howe, every generation essentially repeats every 80 years, there's four generations that repeat. And this fourth turning, it's a big thing anyway. But I wonder what that means. The new generation of children being birthed by moms who are older than they've been at any point in American history. I believe it's going to lead to children being raised by parents that are much wiser, less physically able to do certain things, and more overprotective. And so I don't know what the net benefit of that is, whether it's positive or negative, but I'm curious what you think. You know the numbers. Older parents are here, especially older moms. What do you think the changing face of motherhood means for today's babies, tomorrow's children, and tomorrow's adults? What does a nation of adults raised by 50 and 60-year-old parents look like as compared to a nation of adults raised by 30 and 40-year-old parents? 800-848-9222.
A question. Since before your sun burned hot in space and before your race was born, I have awaited a question.
That is the question. Let me begin with Elizabeth. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi.
Hi.
It's nice to talk. I finally got to talk to you. I've been trying to talk to you for a while. Now I have topic.
Wonderful.
I am a cardiologist. And I had to make a decision as to whether I was going to have children and be a doctor, the sequence, just what you're discussing. And I decided that I didn't think I could do medicine the way I wanted to and be the kind of mother my mother was for me. So I chose not to have children. And I find that I've become a grandmother. I'm more of a grandmother for other people than I am as a child. But it's interesting because I'm a cardiologist and I love emergency medicine. And I knew, so it depends what you choose, because I like being in the emergency room at 2 o'clock in the morning, saving someone's life.
Well, first of all, thank God you're doing that. Elizabeth, what do you think about this? The fact that more women these days are seemingly being faced with the same choice that you were faced with, and they're choosing to basically eat their cake and have it too, basically choosing to launch their career. And look, there are all sorts of reasons people choose to wait before having children. But I think a lot of it has to do with career and pursuing different passions. And they're choosing to start the career now and delay parenthood maybe 5, 10, 15 years later than what their mothers would have done. What do you think this, where do you think this leaves women and where do you think it leaves society?
Well, I think you're right. I think it depends what career the person wants. That's what I was trying to say. Because I wanted to be up at night in the middle of the night in the emergency room cardioverting people, giving them medication that they would need because it's always the really sick patients end up coming in the middle of the night. Whereas the woman that I'm, the other woman doctor, she changed her field and decided she's going to become a psychiatrist, where she doesn't have the night call that I wanted to have. So I think a lot depends on what field you decide to go in as a doctor and how you want to practice. Do you want to practice emergency medicine or do you want to practice a psychiatry? I think what you choose will determine when you have your child.
Well, I think that stands to reason. Elizabeth, thank you. Now that we've spoken, I hope you'll call more often.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. 800-848-9222. I'm also curious what you think of my take that this is going to lead to more overprotective parents. I came across a TED Talk you know, TED is basically these seminars where you do an 8-minute talk on a certain subject. And I came across a TED talk from a 9-year-old girl by the name of Gwen Coffey. And she gave this talk, 9-year-old girl, at the Rancho San Diego Elementary School. Listen to what Gwen says about the importance of trust, tools, and play, and how it feels to grow up in a no talking, no running, no tag world, and why she says all schools should start a mixed age free play club, basically. Here is Gwen talking about overprotective parents, etc.
You might be asking yourself, overprotective parenting probably isn't that bad. Well, studies from the University of California, Berkeley, say it can cause more anxiety for kids, make them less independent, and even plagiarize more. This shows us that adults that consistently hover over and micromanage kids can actually affect their lives in negative ways. Now, I made a survey, and I gave it to about 100 kids in my school, and approximately 57% of it came back as overprotective.
By the way, there's no guarantee that my theory is correct. You know, it wouldn't be the first time I'm wrong. I'm wrong about most things. But you could have older parents do a kind of what my wife and I make an effort to do, which is not be overprotective, which is give Carmine a lot of leeway to do other things. But I don't think so. You know, my mom, who I think now is more protective of me than when I was a baby, you know, my mom was younger than my wife was when she had me. And my mom told me a story of when I was about one. And you know those little walkers that babies run around in? And you know, you put them in the walker and they run around. It's fun. It's fun. I think we had one for Carmine, although they fell out of fashion for a while. I can't keep track that the way that the trending fashions of babies are what's in, what's out. But anyway, I had one when I was a baby, about one. And wouldn't you know it, I'm on this upstairs, and for whatever reason, both my mother and, you know, my babysitter, who I called my Aunt Isabel, they were distracted. They weren't looking at me, and I'm running around in this little walker, and I fell down the stairs. Fell down the stairs in this walker with wheels on it, tumbled down a long flight of steps at 1 year old. I know a lot of you are thinking, well, that explains why you say such strange things on a daily basis. You clearly had a traumatic head injury at a very young age, and it's still taking its toll on you to this very day. So that's something I could see a 31-year-old doing, maybe being distracted and having a lot going on, but maybe not a 38-year-old. So I do think the older you are, the more likely you are to be a bit more overprotective. Maybe overprotective is a wrong word. Cautious, I'll say. You're more likely to be a bit more cautious because you're aware of all the potential dangers that are out there. When if you're a parent or a mom at 22, 23, 24 years old, you're maybe caught up with other things. You're not focused on all of the potential dangers that your child is going to be exposed to, because everybody that's an adult now was raised by parents that were younger, by and large. I know there are exceptions. And those are parents that also didn't cover the outlets, that didn't have gates everywhere protecting things from happening, that had that didn't have drawers with all the knives locked so the kids that couldn't get them. And yet, if you're an adult right now, you survived to adulthood. And maybe you're better off for it, having been exposed to all those dangers. Here's Gwen Coffey, the 9-year-old girl giving this TED talk. Oops, sorry. Here's Gwen.
Have you ever felt micromanaged by your parents, your teacher, your boss? I started a list of things that we aren't allowed to do at school. We aren't allowed to run, allowed to talk. We aren't even allowed to play tag. No, no, no. We kids hear no all day. So imagine a world where adults and parents stop worrying a little bit too much about their kids and show them to take smaller, sad time. I thought school was a place to learn to be independent, self-sufficient, instead of to depend on others to solve all of our problems.
So there you have it. I agree with Gwen. I think children would be better off if they had a little less supervision and a little more independence. And I'm not sure what this trend towards older motherhood portends for that. I'd love to know what you think, though. What do you think older motherhood will mean for the future and the future face of America? 800-848-9222. 800-848-9222. Heaven help me, but let me say hello to E. Frank. Hi, E. Frank.
Yes. Hi, Frank. I was waiting for you to bring this topic up so I can discuss it a little with you. You know, I
he was waiting for me to bring this topic up.
Back
how did he know
years
he
ago, has a daughter that had a child at 12 years old. And my mother had me at 28. It's a matter of family values. At that time, I was conceived in 1969. It was a feeling of the future for America. Family values were a little bit different. People had an outlook on natural births and other things. Now, I believe that what you're explaining in regards to a more mature and responsible mother having a child at a later age is probably a best option, because values do change from generation to generation. I was born a Generation X. Now we have children that are millennials. Their values and their parents see things a little bit differently now in the 21st century with the modernization of technology and other things.
All right, well.
And now I see parents that are becoming mothers at age 50. I'm 53 years old, and I see a few of them, pregnant at 53. I mean, I don't understand how a woman can conceive at that age, and the medical procedure for a woman who gets pregnant at 53 is very technical and dangerous. It's, you know, you could have a...
All right, Frank. Well, I understand the medical science involved here, but I'm more interested in the cultural aspect of this for the moment. 800-848-9222. Pete is in New Jersey. Hi, Pete.
Yeah, hi, Mr. Frank. I have two statements. My first statement is about you. I think that you are the best interviewer of people whom I've ever heard on radio. And I'm astounded. When I listen to you interview, I'm just astounded at your ability at that
Well, that's very kind, Pete. I'm astounded that you're willing to listen. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. That's my first statement. My second statement is on the other subject. Here's what it is. For 3,000 years of what we call the First Testament, the Most High, the Creator, introduced himself as a personality to the children of Israel. And his message was this. His message was that all of creation, everything serves him either in his justice or in his mercy, one or the other. And that includes the angels, the damned and cursed angels, the mortal human, everything. He says that his name is He Who Is, and that yours and my name is You Who Are Not. Which is the opposite. You know, we have it. We have what we call pride, where I am, I'm everything. He said, no, your name is You Who Are Not. And my name is I Am He Who Is. And everything in all of my invisible, visible, invisible, everything serves me either in my mercy or my judgment.
All right. Well, that's certainly helpful and interesting, Pete. Pete, I appreciate you listening. I appreciate the phone call, and I very much appreciate the compliment. Thank you. Phil in New Jersey, what's on your mind?
Hey, Frank. Interesting topic. I'm 62. My kid is 12 years old. He's a boy. And I can tell you that the contract, like, number one, if I had had my son in my 20s, I know that I wouldn't have, I'd have barely noticed him, because between career and romantic anglings and dramas and things like that, none of that would have receded like in favor of my son. Mm-hmm. When my son was born, they would have had to coexist, and therefore I would have been rationalizing 5 minutes, you know, in the evening with him as being like enough if I dropped him a quick phone call. Fast forward to today instead, and when I did have my son, he basically, he jokes around that, I mean, I haunt him. Like I can't, he can't get away from me. There's a certain amount of truth to that because, I'm semi-retired and it's to the point to where when he speaks with other kids in school, they don't, you know, they think he's like, kind of like from another species. Like in school, this is Mendham Township, New Jersey. It's kind of an affluent area, but the fathers are not present. Number one, I think the kids joke about their father. They're all gone. Every single one of them is working in Manhattan or doing something mm-hmm. in like a corporate center in Woodbridge or in the legal center over there in wherever all the lawyers are in Jersey. I forget the name of that town. So they're just absent. And the kid, they have no grounding in anything. My kid learns a lot of boomer stuff. Like he understands a lot of references, jokes, expressions that me and my father and my grandfather, you know, used to.
Sure.
I think that it's a wonderful thing. Now, as far as playing catch, you can't play catch because my knees are really bad. But you're going to get through that because I use a lot of surrogates. And I got on the phone and I used friends that had knees.
Don't tell the Pope.
So on and so forth to put together events. Or I bought a dog because obviously you can't be the father running around. You better get a dog, in a backyard.
Well, Phil, so it sounds like this has worked out really well for you, but it also sounds like it reiterates everything that I said about older parents, which is you seem to be more patient, less physically able to participate in some of the physical aspect of this, more wise and able to pass on that wisdom to your son. I'm just curious, Phil, is your wife also an older mom?
She is an older mom. And, some mothers are more engaged than others. I don't think it's because of my engagement, but I think she is a naturally kind of a laissez-faire to a degree that's too much. Based on the way she was raised. So she is an older mom, but she's an unusual case because I don't think she was thrilled about having the family. She just doesn't. You can't analyze her.
Understood.
Compared to a mom that wanted the family.
Understood. Phil, I have to run because I have Gnome Laden.
You're very right, Frank, about what you said. You were very right about the wisdom and everything.
Hey, I appreciate the perspective, Phil. Good luck with your son, and keep us posted. Call again. Thank you. 800-848-9222. Gnome Laden is here. We'll get his take on the world at large straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Hi, it's Ernie Anastas. You know, your thoughts can affect how you feel, and how you feel can impact your thoughts. Addressing your mind and body connection is the key to improving your overall wellness. Bergen Newbridge Medical Center is the largest hospital in New Jersey, providing comprehensive, equitable, compassionate, and high-quality emergency inpatient and outpatient medical care, plus mental health services and substance use disorder treatment. The Bergen Newbridge team can address your total health needs in one convenient location. Call 201-225-7130. For an appointment or newbridgehealth.org.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
And this is a birthday bumper music selection from an old friend of mine going back nearly 20 years, Francesca Hazel, although I don't believe that was her name when I last saw her, which is probably 12 or 13 years ago. But it's her birthday today, and apparently she's a Britney Spears fan, likes that 90s music, so hopefully she's doing something fun, and her husband Kevin is able to make all of her wishes come true, but not make the rest of us who, you know, are also husbands look bad in the process. Meantime, someone who is the answer to many people's birthday wishes has wandered into the news, into the newsroom to bring you the news.
Stand by for the other side of midnight's news.
From New York City, the other side of midnight and its affiliated stations present national and international news with Frank Morano and news director Noam Layden. Their summary of the world news and personal comments. Get the rest of the story.
Hello, Noam.
Good morning, Frank. Wanted to update you on a story we brought to you a number of months ago out of Oklahoma. This bill that had been introduced that would let chaplains enter into school buildings and be school counselors. Well, there was a lot of talk about this a number of months ago. Maybe it's even back to the summer. Well, yesterday, this bill advanced out of committee in Oklahoma. So it looks like at some point soon, they will take a vote on whether chaplains in the community, they don't have to have teaching degrees, or for that matter, a degree in counseling, will be able to now enter schools. The school systems would have to give them the okay, but chaplains of any faith would now become school counselors in Oklahoma. Now, they've tried this in a number of other states, Texas, Florida. They failed to go through, but they think they have enough votes in Oklahoma to make this come true. Now, you can imagine there's people on both sides. You have Democrats and Republicans, by the way, who are on both sides of this issue, who say this is a clear violation of church and state. And so they say they will do everything to try and stop this. But others say, look, these will be non-denominational chaplains who will go into these schools to give counseling. And the issue is, in Oklahoma, and as it is in almost every state in the country, is there's not enough school counselors in schools to handle the caseload that's coming in. It doesn't matter. Really, almost any school you walk into in North America today will tell you they have so many kids that have so many issues and they don't have the help they need to address all those issues. Here in Oklahoma, they say they think they can fill the void by bringing these chaplains in.
Well, you know, we did talk about this not long ago, and the shortage of school counselors, first of all, is just awful, but that's exactly what a lot of these states say is the reason they have to use these chaplains to plug the gap. But the biggest objections to this were, putting aside the church and state argument, which, you know, is real, and I get that, but was whether or not these chaplains would have the proper training that schools, school counselors do. I guess some parents and some school administrators may wrestle with, is it better to have your a child that's dealing with anxiety or depression or needing some help with something trained by someone or guided by someone that may not have all the proper boxes checked, or have them not get any proper guidance at all? Right.
And I think that's a great question. And you, when you say no counseling experience at all, well, somebody goes through divinity school, they go through rabbinical school. Clearly, a big part of doing any of those things is you learn how to counsel people who sit in front of you, whether it's over wedding vows, a separation, or in the case of problems with kids. So they think this will fill that void. It's not 100% clear it's going to go through, because in Oklahoma, like it is in so many other places, normally it's really a two-sided issue. But here you have both Republicans and Democrats on both sides of the issue. And well, so it may not get through. Yeah.
So what's the next step in that in Oklahoma? Anyway?
So the bill has come out of committee, and then it's just a matter of pushing it through to see if they can actually get it taken up for a vote. It's not clear that's going to happen, but this is a huge step towards making it law in Oklahoma.
Got it.
Okay. There's a restaurant chain here in New York City. Do you know Sansan Chicken, Sansan Ramen, or the Yasso Kitchen? Have you heard of any of those?
Not up on those, no.
So it's a decent sized chain that's here in New York City. It's originally based out of the Philippines. And when you walk into their restaurants now, they have figured out a way to bypass all these laws that have raised the minimum wage to, for some of these restaurants, what they think is an astronomical amount of money that is affecting their business in a big way.
I hear this from restaurant owners all the time.
So Now, there's been a recent raise in the minimum wage over the last couple of years. So now when you walk into any of these three restaurant chains, you're greeted by a screen, a TV screen. And on that TV screen is a worker who asks you what you want to eat. And so when people initially walk into these restaurants, because they just started doing this, they thought this was like some form of AI, that they were talking to some AI bot. But no, it's a live person who's actually in the Philippines asking them what they want off their menu. So you can say, oh, you know, I'll have the ramen with a little pork on the side or whatever it may be. And there are workers, and of course, in the restaurant who make it and then bring it to you. But these restaurants say they're saving an enormous amount of money. So here, the minimum wage in New York City is what is like 16, 17 bucks an hour. These workers in the Philippines that they hired are making $3.50 an hour. And apparently the people who walk into these restaurants, most people say, you know, they're used to this kind of thing. It's kind of the same idea as walking into a grocery store and paying for your groceries and checking them out all on your own.
There's nobody there. I hate
you like going to the person and having them do it for you.
But I recognize that a lot of these businesses can save a lot more money by, if not outsourcing it to someone in the Philippines, hiring a machine and not having to pay them $20 an hour in benefits.
And awfully interesting to see if other restaurants will take them up on this. And, you know, McDonald's, of course, now and some of these fast food chains have these panels, you know, smart screens when you walk in where you just order and then you walk up and your food's ready for you. So you have almost zero contact with the worker. But here's the thing that is getting New Yorkers peeved off about this. Some people say, okay, it's impersonal. I want somebody standing there so I can ask questions. But these people are apparently very good in the Philippines who are answering the questions. By the way, they're sitting like in their living rooms. So you're ordering like ramen and they're like, would you like, you know, an egg with that or whatever? And then the order goes through. But here's the part that is just outraging almost everybody that goes into these establishments is at the end when you go to put your pay for it, there is a tip screen.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And the tip screen, the first tip is 10% and then it goes up to 25%. And they're saying, wait a minute. I am talking to somebody who's sitting on their sofa watching TV in the Philippines. Why am I tipping them? And so that has been the big wrinkle in all this.
They're not watching TV. They're still talking to you about the menu and giving you their expertise, presumably, and putting in your order. But that's crazy.
And what's also so interesting about this is these same workers in the Philippines who are working for these restaurants here in New York City. It is a organization that does this for other restaurants. So if there's nobody at their terminal here in New York, then they're talking to people in the UK.
Wow.
Answering questions, not the same restaurant chain, different restaurant chain.
So I talk to this automated person, and then how do I get my food?
There is an actual physical worker.
A separate physical worker.
Yeah, who just has almost no interaction with you. They just bring you your tray of food or your bag of food to walk out.
Are we expected to tip that guy as well?
Well, so the thought is when you're putting that tip in, that some of it, hopefully, is going to those workers who are actually physically making your food in that establishment. We couldn't confirm that that's what's going on. But the people who've walked into these restaurants say, okay, fine, if you're going to do this, but I don't need to tip somebody in the Philippines. Mm. All right, how old is too old to live? This is a question. As you get older, you start to think like, how old do I really want to live? So there's a new oldest guy in the world. Did you know this?
I imagine that's a new story you could do almost every week.
Right. Well, here's the sad part, of course, becoming the Guinness Book of World Records oldest person in the world is because for that to happen, somebody else has to die. Right. So somebody has died. It was a guy in Venezuela. His name was Juan Vincent Perez. He died at 114 years old just a couple days ago. So because he passed away, John Alfred Tenniswood of the UK, of England, is now the oldest person in the world. He's 111, 223 days.
That's it? I mean, I feel like he should be older.
I feel so, too. Like, I kind of remember, weren't there people, like, in China who were, like, 120 or something like that?
No, those were all
bonus.
Please.
So, Tenniswood, he lives in Southport. And, of course, the question everybody wants to know, right? Well, how have you hung on so long?
Right.
And he says most of it is that he does everything for himself. So even at this age, he says, I'm able to get out of my bed by myself. I'm able to walk around by myself. He lives in one of these, senior citizen care centers. And they say he's a chatterbox nonstop. The brain's working great. But here's the part that I thought was the best of what he said has kept him around. He said, first of all, he said, number one, it's luck.
Right.
Luck. It's just, I'm lucky that I've lived. Neither, no two ways about it. Everybody around me is dead. This is 100% luck.
I'm sure, though, it does help if you're not smoking two packs a day and eating three bacon cheeseburgers every day, right?
And he doesn't do any of that.
Right.
He says he's a pretty healthy eater. But he says what has kept him around this long, you'll love this.
I will.
Is he's a huge fan of listening to the radio.
Ah! There you have it. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
That, so if you want to live longer, listen longer.
Yes, he says he listens to the radio every single day. It's on most of the day. He says early in the morning, he's tuned in very closely to get the news, business news. He's still active, apparently trading stocks and that kind of thing. But he says everything he's learned is from listening to the radio.
Well, that is God bless him. Hopefully, you know, he lives as long as all those biblical ages of people who used to live to 1,000.
Yeah.
That is wonderful. Congratulations to him. Thank you. No.
Sure.
And now you know the rest of the story.
800-848-9222. We will do 15 seconds of fame in a bit, where you get to the opportunity to be heard for on any subject for 15 seconds. You know what's back? Magazines. Magazines are having a moment, and there's this wave of excitement about good old-fashioned paper magazines. I'm excited about that. I used to really enjoy, and again, different points in your life, you have different interests, but I used to really enjoy a lot of different magazines. I still do. I just got a copy, I was going through the mail just now, of the latest edition of Reason magazine, which I enjoy. And, you know, there's a lot of news-based magazines, political magazines that I may read. I love reading the paper version of the American Conservative, even though a lot of those articles are also available online. Love that publication. There's when I was you know what magazine I used to love in that vein? George, John F. Kennedy Jr.'s magazine. I thought it was terrific. I love the artwork. I love the journalism. I love the features they do. They even had Al D'Amato doing an advice column, which I thought was brilliant. I thought that was a fun magazine that I miss. Obviously, it's a shame that John F. Kennedy Jr. died, but that George magazine was great. When I was really into pro wrestling, there were three or four wrestling magazines that I just swore by. And when I was maybe about nine, my grandmother, knowing of my affinity for wrestling, she got me for my birthday one year a subscription to, I think, three different wrestling magazines. And I thought this was the greatest thing in the world, that I would get these magazines every month. I still think that's a great gift for people. For whatever their interest, chances are there's a magazine for it. And I'm glad that magazines are making a bit of a comeback. We'll do 15 seconds of fame straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight. Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Midnight by the late, great Andy B. If you want to be heard for 15 seconds, now's your opportunity. 800-848-9222.
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
Nick.
The Old Testament and New Testament, same God, different covenant. The Dead Sea Scrolls gave credibility to the ancient text, as well as Christ fulfilling 200 prophecies from the old text as well.
Raji.
The poor, helpless wage earners get poorer and poorer. While profiteering professionals and businesses welcome inflation, raising prices and fees by up to 100%.
E. Frank.
Yes, I was, I'm a withdrawn fourth degree knight of Columbus.
Of course you are.
And I was informed that I have to live under communion in respect to the Holy See. Where is Eric Adams serving the DNC?
Rusty.
Yeah, I tried to call up all week. You keep me hanging on. You don't answer the call. You want to censor me, you censor me. Boy, you stink.
Rocco.
Yes, Frank. John Katsimatidis has the perfect promotion now. Listen to 77 WABC and live longer.
Cheech.
Mikey, don't drive off the expressway this morning. Listen, you got to put Fredo in the corner. You know why? I know.
Maria.
Hi, everybody. I just wanted to thank you, Frank, for reading my postcard yesterday. You got no idea how it made me feel so happy. You got no idea. And I want everybody to have a good day.
And finally, Mike.
Morning, Frank. Scientific studies have shown any acute head trauma experienced in the pre-toddler years may result in a unique pronunciation of certain words later in life.
Frank Morano, good day.